Hello and welcome to Freedom Watch, your daily dose of raw liberty streaming online at foxnews.com. I'm your host, Judge Andrew Napolitano, here defending freedom, defending your natural rights, and defending your right to have a government that stays within the confines of the Constitution. With few exceptions, American presidents have violated the Constitution with abandon. John Adams prosecuted his political opponents for their free speech. Lincoln suspended the writ of habeas corpus and sent soldiers to kill civilians, rob banks, and burn courthouses. Woodrow Wilson locked up those who spoke out against the Great War, World War I, and with few exceptions, many of them were never charged, never saw a lawyer, or never even saw a judge. George W. Bush showed such contempt for the Constitution that he authorized spying without warrants, incarceration without trial, and waged a war without Congress declaring one. But no president in history has violated more parts of the Constitution, aroused more condemnation of those who love freedom, and brought us closer to a socialist state than Franklin Delano Roosevelt. FDR closed banks, confiscated property, invalidated private contracts, regulated prices and wages, arrested Americans on the basis of their ancestry, and even let the Japanese bomb a defenseless Pearl Harbor. He was at first praised by many of the liberals in his own party, and then as the Depression worsened and as his authoritarian rejection of American values became more apparent and made it worse, many of his own folks even turned on him. It has been argued persuasively that FDR's utter contempt for limited government and individual liberty and the free market actually created a new generation of classical liberals, today called libertarians, whose initial love of liberty was first challenged by him. My next guest has made just such an argument recently. He and I believe that FDR single-handedly aroused the need to watch whatever the government does. Joining me now is Damon Root, associate editor at Reason Magazine. What did FDR do that so aroused hatred even unto the present generation?
Well, that's a very long list, Judge. He threatened to pack the Supreme Court with justices who would uphold the New Deal. He passed he pushed forward legislation that, as you said, would regulate wages and prices, could tell you how much you could charge to get a suit pressed, what you could pay someone, what minimum, maximum wages were. I mean, he brought forward this nightmare of central planning and attempted to make it real across the country.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Damon, a lot of the central planning was monitored by local boards. When they did this in the Soviet Union, they were called Communist Party cells, but here they were called local boards. There were about 500 of them around the country that would go into your shop, and there's a reason we picked dry cleaning, because of a notorious case in New Jersey, and make sure that you weren't overcharging or undercharging.
That's right. There was a dry cleaner, Jacob Maggett, I believe his name was, who charged 5 cents less than what the National Recovery Administration code was. And he was in violation of the law for undercharging, as you say. So what you have is this system whereby every aspect of the economy is regulated, is monitored. Is you're telling individuals that I can't sell to you, you can't sell to me, you can only charge a certain price. It's this absolute, you know, centralization of power reaching into every aspect of people's lives.
Tell us about the generation of observers of FDR, journalists and commentators of the day, who welcomed his defeat of Herbert Hoover and ended up becoming some of his biggest adversaries, one of whom was his predecessor as the governor of New York, a liberal Democrat called Al Smith.
Al Smith's a fascinating character from this era because he's a four-term governor of New York. He pioneers on the state level many of the reforms that the New Deal puts in place in the national level, whether it's rent control, wage and price control, things like that.
Unemployment insurance, workers' compensation, et cetera.
Et cetera, et cetera. But yet, he finds that the New Deal, this has gone too far. And his inspiration is the prohibition of alcohol, the 18th Amendment. And what he sees is these good intentions, let's say, of anti-alcohol reformers just run amok on the national level. And so you've got the rise of black markets, Al Capone, the crime waves associated with alcohol prohibition. And he sees that this is too much power for the central government to have. So the very things that he supports on a state level, He says it's gone too far with the New Deal and speaks out against Roosevelt.
Because he understood that there's an area of human behavior legitimately, lawfully, constitutionally regulable by the states, and that is not an area that the Constitution reposes in the federal government for regulation.
No, that's correct. He understands federalism at the most basic level, and he also understands just the terrible risks of giving too much power to the central
state.
One
of the things that FDR did, and the Democrats that controlled Congress let him do, which really aggravated a lot of people, was to rule by fiat and then have the rule codified into law. For example, it was FDR on his own, by signing a piece of paper that suddenly made criminals of tens of millions of Americans who owned gold. Gold, which had been the lawful means of exchange for hundreds of years for the life of the country, suddenly you were a criminal if you didn't give your gold to the government. He did that on his own, and weeks later, the Congress enacted legislation that authorized him to do what he had already done.
You know, for the past 8 years, we've seen people on the left complain about executive authority from the George W. Bush administration and folks on the right and libertarians criticizing Bush. But yet this love affair that we see now on the left with FDR and comparing Obama to FDR, we're talking about FDR, a president who pioneers this abuse of executive power of unilaterally making law criminalizing behavior. It'd be nice to see some consistency. That if big government and big business shouldn't be in bed together, then we don't want it on the left side and we don't want it on the right side.
You know, when he tried to pack the court, when he tried to change the law so that he could appoint a new federal judge or Supreme Court justice for every sitting judge or justice who had served 10 years and had reached age 70 and had not yet retired, they just sort of made these numbers up on their own. It was soundly defeated in the Senate, and because it was defeated in the Senate, never even voted on in the House. But sadly, it had its effect. It sort of chastened the Supreme Court, because the same Supreme Court that invalidated the National Recovery Act, the very guts of his, I'll regulate the economy from Washington, D.C., suddenly started whistling a different tune, and it was the same nine persons on the court.
They call it the switch in time, as you know, that saves nine. In 1935, when the National Recovery Act is struck down, it's unanimous. So this is not just the conservatives on the court. This is all nine justices on the court say this is too far. And then just a few years later, you have the West Coast Hotel decision where the Supreme Court takes a step back and says, all right, we're going to play ball. As you say, they're chastised. They're scared of just the power that this president can wield.
I know we could talk about this for hours, and maybe it's an unfair last question, but you and I have talked about this in different places at different times. The Constitution, a pact with the devil or a protector of human freedom?
Well, I'm with Frederick Douglass. I say the Constitution is a glorious liberty document, but that's interpreted correctly. So, and I don't think it's that hard to interpret the Constitution correctly. I think you can read it. You can understand that this protects natural rights, individual rights, that think of it as a small island of government power surrounded by a sea of rights, a sea of liberty. So we give the government a little bit of power, but we retain many, many rights and correctly understood.
And we, as Thomas Jefferson said, hold down the government with chains. Unfortunately, those chains have been broken. Damon Root from Reason Magazine, it's a pleasure.
Thanks
for joining us.